Don't worry, I'm not gonna hurt you.
And welcome to Kinky and the Geek. We're doing another one of our rolling casts.
Well, we're at least gonna start the cast in the car.
Yeah, well, we may finish when we get home or something, but...
Yeah, well, I need to, because one of the things I want to talk about, I have to pull up on the computer.
Okay, well, Bill, we'll finish when we get home, won't we?
Yeah, that's what I figured we'd do, is, as a way to kind of get us back into the groove, we pick up the recorder when we're in the car.
Okay.
And start there.
And
finish when we get home, yeah. This will be more kind of a free-flowing portion of the cast.
But hey, we're recording and in a decent amount of time.
Woo. Stop bringing that up. Don't make me not spank you.
Yes, sir.
Best way to shut her up. Don't whine. You know I'm going to spank you at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe not a full-blown session, but my hand will be on your ass at some point.
True. Very true.
Hell, you get molested most nights.
Very true.
Speaking of which, no, one of the things that made me want to do it tonight was, again, at work, because I don't listen to podcasts, stupid shit goes through my head.
Yes.
And this was something that I think I don't know if I've discussed with you, but it's actually been a thought in my head.
Okay.
You would say... Of our friend base. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was going to flub that up. I knew I was going to say fan base instead of friend base. But of our friend base, I would say, especially of the female friend base,
uh-huh.
I would say probably 90% of our female friends, and I am including people we've met at con, our core is true.
Yeah.
About 90%, I would say, would label themselves as geeks.
Yes.
Okay.
Very much.
And then I started thinking, also, out of that part of the friend base, because the only two that come right offhand are the waitress and the waitress and the hairdresser.
Yeah.
I would say those are the two that probably do not, although the waitress does have geek tendencies, but the hairdresser definitely doesn't. We call her our Penny.
Yeah, no, she's definitely our Penny.
But of our female geek friends, and including the acquaintances we've known from con, I would say over 50% are bi.
Yeah, probably.
Well, if you think about it, there's only two right offhand that would call themselves geeks that I would not... that I would not call bi. I mean, and I'm going from bi from making out, you know, going from the spectrum of... Oh, let's put it this way. Heteroflexible to full-on bi.
True. Okay.
And I like heteroflexible a little better than I like bi-curious.
Yeah, I like
that. I kind of like that word. Although, I think bi-curious is still a thing.
Yeah.
But I think heteroflexible kind of covers a little more.
Right.
And that's M, who we had dinner and trivia with tonight.
Yeah.
And your sister.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we've been watching a lot of SourceFed Nerd.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the two female... They have two main female hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Who we actually have talked about on here in the last podcast. Meg Turney.
Yeah.
And Trisha Hershberger. Mm-hmm. Well, Meg Turney is full out of the closet bisexual. Who is also a huge geek in more than ways of just costuming.
Yeah.
And it got to thinking, and it's one of those things where I don't really have much to say myself, but it would be, to me, it would be interesting to try to figure out at some, you know, someone with a bigger brain than me, the correlation of bisexual woman and geek. Because it does seem to be very prevalent in the geek in geek culture to come across a woman who, you know, it seems like you have a better chance of coming across a geek bisexual woman than just a bisexual woman in general.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's just the circles we run in, but that does seem to be true.
Right. I mean, yeah, granted, we run in it, but if you think about it, we're kind of open to a lot of the different people. But if you think about it, the three women in our gaming group, all bi.
Yeah, we are.
The one that lives up north, bi.
Yeah.
I have a feeling the one with the kid could be at least heteroflexible.
At least, yeah.
I know a certain zombie is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's... I don't know if there is any... I mean, okay, you are a bisexual geek.
Yes, I am.
Do you think it... What do you think? I mean, you're the one who actually is in this demographic I'm talking about.
I'm not really one to question people about such things, so
well,
I'm not
really
sure.
Questioning, but I just it's.
I'm not sure. I've never really thought about it. That's the thing. I'm just like, yeah. Never really thought about it before.
Well, part of the thing I was actually kind of thinking is that it is, if you think about it, both geeks and bisexuals, not even women, just bisexuals in general, tend right. to both be outcast groups.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because bisexual people are looked down on, especially in the gay community.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I've read stuff and seen a little bit, you know, where they're like, you know, we'll pick one way or the other.
It's right. Like, they basically, the thing is that, oh, you're just lying to yourself. You're actually blank, but don't want to admit it.
Which isn't true.
Right. And it's...
I prefer both. Why can't I be a yes? You know?
Well, because everybody has to be in a neat little category.
And why isn't that a category? That's always been my question.
Yeah, I mean, it does make you think, but you think bisexuals and geeks are both outcasts in different things.
True, yeah.
And so there might be, you know, I mean, especially when it comes to bisexual girls, they all seem to like the quote-unquote, quote, boy stuff.
Yeah. I've met very many that don't, you know, like something that's considered boy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's Kiara, true. Even though she does nails and she knits, is a comic book reader, again, considered a boy.
Kind of considered a boy thing.
Yeah, that's, you know.
Yeah.
But then again, the kitty is special, considering she knew she was poly at a young age, too.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think that's the one interesting thing about when you start getting into the geek, into especially con geek culture, because you can't be a geek and not really be part of the con scene.
Yeah.
About just how kinky and the con culture tends to be.
True. And a lot of us don't realize it until we're older. I mean, I can look back on some of the stuff I used to do as a kid, and I'm like, yeah, I should have known.
Right.
I mean, I liked to be tied up and play sacrifice and stuff when I was a kid, and I always liked being the one tied up as a kid.
Right.
You know, it's like, now it's like, yeah, I see that.
Well, considering FetLife has a panel every year at Dragon Con.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there used to be a roaming BDSM party back in my beginning day. You know, well, back when I started partying more at con. That's what I used to do. It wasn't until much later that I actually started to go to stuff. A lot of times it was during the day we went to party, you know. We hung out and then we partied at night or hit the concert or whatever we decided to do. So, yeah, I mean, it was just, I don't know why, it just kind of popped up in my head that this was something I wanted to... I think it also came across, and I wanted to hold it off and bring it up to you without a forethought, you know.
Okay.
Which maybe be, you know, I wanted you to think on your feet a little bit when it came to this.
Sorry, I'm kind of hazy today, so...
Yeah. But, I mean, it's an interesting... I mean, it is one of those things I would love to do a... You know, if I was more of the scientist type and tried to figure out, you know, because there is a cross section of con that you always see, you know, you'll see everywhere at con. In other words, you go to a Chattacon, you go to a DragonCon, you go, and even at to a point, Frolicon, you start seeing the same faces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we have con friends that, yeah, I know that. The only time we see him is at con, but we see him 2-3 times a year.
Yeah, right. Because it is, but see, because it is, because, you know, if you look at it at homosexuality in general, in the general populace, it's a very small percentage. But as you get into geeks, you start seeing more bisexual people than I think you see in the norm.
True.
I mean, granted, it is a smaller cross section of the. You know, of society in general.
But yeah, it does tend to be seem at least.
At least it seems, yeah. I mean, guys tend to, even though there are your gay and your lesbians that are in the, you know, that are in the community, but it does tend to skew. And maybe it is again, just because of the small circle I've run in. Is
may just be that we're more open.
Guys, well, that's part of it too. Although, as saying last time, there's still a lot of hate because we just watched the new documentary by the guys who did 4 days at DragonCon, the cosplay.
Yeah.
And they did talk about it's cosplay crafting an identity. Those who don't live in the Atlanta area, you could probably look at. I think it's pbs30.org.
Maybe. I'll check that.
And you could most likely dig a little and you could find both of them. But they were talking because they were talking to Yahya Han and seeing the, you know, two Asian, blah, 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 the hate that kind of comes.
Which is sad.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of that is the digital age. People feel a lot more... with the anonymous feeling are open to being jackasses.
Yeah. I can see that, you know, hiding behind the anonymity of the net.
I mean, just look at, God, the worst place that I've seen when it comes to comments, at least I've seen and I've heard other people say it, YouTube.
Oh, yeah. So many videos that have to have the comments shut off. Yeah, because the venom that gets spewed.
I don't know what it is about YouTube, but Lord have mercy, the douche and the bag come out.
Yeah.
It's just not even funny. Okay, well, we are almost home. So what will be a very brief pause for you will be us getting in the house and getting the puppy out of the cage and getting a little more comfortable, and we will finish up this cast momentarily. Here at part two,
we're home
we got our water, we're half dressed, I'm sitting on a puppy,
kind of
yeah. She's sitting on behind me. Okay, and one of the things that I started that kind of made me go, oh, you know, let's record, besides the talk of bisexual women, which always make me, is IO9, which seems to be
getting quite a few articles from there.
Well, but I think they follow this kind of stuff. And see, this is the problem, folks, and I hope I'll put the call out right now. The problem with trying to do a Kinky and the Geek podcast by ourselves, we're not dealing with a lot of kinky, you know, there's not a lot of kinky going on in this household right now.
Well, I mean, mostly because tired,
yeah.
Sore.
Right.
I'm getting ready for demo team competition at my martial arts school. And
part of the problem is that because of that, finding positive, either sexual or especially kinky, mm-hmm. stories is getting hard.
So many of them are just, they discuss, well...
Well, it's usually involving some kind of weird ritualistic murder.
Yeah.
You put in kinky news and you get a shitload of that.
A lot of that.
But the nice thing is I think it's IO9 and Huffington Post seem to be two where they have some really good sex positive or at least interesting articles. And, you know, we had the whole thing about the kinky, kink positive.
Yeah.
That stuff from last week.
Yeah, and we're always glad to bring those articles to the light of the proper people.
Right.
Which I'm hoping are our listeners.
Yeah, and so we came across this one that I thought was just a really intriguing little article.
It is. I got to read this article earlier when you posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, and it's an article called How Did Monogamy Evolve? And this is the opening paragraph. From an evolutionary standpoint, monogamy doesn't seem to make much sense, especially for males. And yet, it's practiced by a significant number of mammalian species, including humans. Now is a fascinating example of science and progress. Two newly published studies with divergent conclusions seek to explain why. And the main concept is, when it comes to monogamy in a species such as ours, it doesn't make sense, especially for the males, being with women. With women, they have an extended gestation period.
9 whole months.
Right. Plus a finite amount of years where they can actually produce offspring. And with men, basically being able to propagate at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
You know, let's
you know, just put it out there.
I mean, you can have, you know, you can pretty much keep producing sperm until you're dead.
Yeah.
Men
don't have a menopause like women do.
Right. So it comes to wonder why, and you do have to wonder why monogamy has even reared its head, and not just in humans.
But in other species.
But in other species. Especially, you know, other primates and other mammals. Well, according to this, they had two. One is a zoologist named Dieter Lucas at the University of Cambridge, and which is a study, and also a co-author of Timothy Clunton Block. They came up with a hypothesis. You basically had, and then this is a one suggests that the continuous selection of some form of parental care, such as contributions to caring or provisioning young, or their protection from infanticide by competing males, alternative social monogamy may represent a male guarding strategy and may have evolved where males are unable to defend access to more than one female. And it seems both of them come down, this particular one comes down on the Lucas and Clinton Block article, or Brock article, comes down the side that it's male gardening. And it basically tracked a whole bunch of different non-human mammalian species
mm-hmm.
over a period of time and realizes that mammals transitioned from solitary lifestyles to social monogamy 61 times in the 170 million years of evolution separating from a shared ancestor. And the whole concept of male gardening is basically breeding females
mm-hmm.
don't want to compete with one another, so they keep a very wide berth of each other.
Right. And
it comes to where it gets very hard for one male to
keep be, other males from coming in and
propagating with the one woman he already has, the one female he already has, because there's too much distance between breeding females.
Yeah,
he leaves it open to where that the female he has already had isn't going to be impregnated with, you know.
Yeah,
if he didn't get his progeny.
Yeah, if he didn't get her pregnant the first time, well, you know, he's moved on to the next female. What's say another male doesn't come behind and impregnate her himself? Yeah, I mean.
And their basic concept is that the parental care is actually a consequence rather than a cause of social monogamy. And then they have Christopher Opie, who he's a University College London anthropologist, who basically his thing is he has had evidence of both. His study dealt strictly with primates. He did not follow other mammarial species. His team looked at 230 species in total, comparing data on things like mating behavioral, parental contributions to the care of the offspring, and rates of infanticide by competing males, and running through the computer simulation teased out correlation between those traits and the evolution of monogamy. His thing is that it is not... researchers found corroborative evidence supporting both hypotheses, but of all the behaviors emphasized by rival mares was the only one to reliably predict a shift to monogamy mating, suggesting a casual link. The findings suggest that the threat of male infanticide was what drove the evolution of monogamy in primates, and that monogamy in turn facilitated the emergence of the male gardening and parental care. Because, you know, we do know that in big cats, especially lions, that if a male lion takes over a pride, he will kill
all the cubs that
are not his, so he can guarantee the female going into heat and impregnating her
himself.
So, but now that's the interesting thing is that he's basically the only difference between the two is that the last man did just primates.
Yeah.
So it almost makes it interesting that maybe the primate, you know, it almost seems like maybe species by species you have to look at, because it could be primates doing that. It does seem that primates do tend to have a little more of a social core.
True.
Than some other mammals. I mean, you see that especially in the Goodall research, that they actually do have a higher, you know, they do commune. You know, they do have, you know, packs, I guess you could.
Packs, families,
of several different groups, yeah. They have family groups within, families within groups.
Yeah.
So you can have several, you know, the gorillas were, you know.
Yeah.
So... I mean, it's just really interesting that they are talking that, as it says, why the discrepancy? There's one explanation could be that monogamy in primates simply tends to evolve via a different route than it does with other mammals. So, I mean, close to a third of primate species are socially monogamous compared to about 5% of mammals as a whole. It is not unreasonable to assume that they develop monogamy social systems by an alternate evolutionary route. It almost seems like both could be right, just depending on what species of mammal you're talking about.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think when it comes to humans, though, I think it's a little different because we have evolved mentally as well, you know, to where the concept of love and caring has come in more. You know, when you deal with a baser animal instinct, their basic thing is to survive, is to propagate.
Although in some ways the, you know, protecting one's genetic line can't right. come back into it. I mean, you know, in ancient times, you know, you, I guess the double standard of men having many women or having only the one came because, you know, if the female is the, if the guy is only with these certain females and there's no other guys there, he's sure that his line is being right. propagated.
And I think that also, I think we've also seen that a scarcity of men, where men, you know, where more men have had to.
Because females do, in some ways, tend to be more plentiful.
Yes.
I don't have any like studies to quote here, but there just always seems to be more females than males.
Depending on the situation.
Depending on the situation, but yeah, it just I don't know. I'm remembering things I used to hear as a kid, like on TV and stuff. But.
I think it is basically. I think that does tend to the. Overall, birth rate does tend to be a little more female. I mean, it's. I think I've heard that it is kind of 50-50, but it does seem to skew a little more female than male. Which, if you think about it, you kind of have to have.
Right.
To ensure a cleaner genetic line, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of nature's way of making sure you're not inbreeding.
Right, because inbreeding is bad.
Yeah.
Always bad. It causes problems.
I mean, just about any species. I mean, look at purebred lines.
Oof, yeah.
I mean, a purebred line tends to develop...
Issues. And I mean, look at dogs.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. I want to say look at bulldogs.
Yeah.
Especially the English bulldogs. They have respiratory problems. Due to the fact of their breed, you know, the way they're
pugs as well.
Yeah,
you know, when they've developed respiratory issues, and there are others that like develop skeletal issues. I forget exactly.
Well, I think Dachshunds are one of those, as they've tried to keep the breeds.
Yeah.
Pure, they've developed. I mean, they are very quick to develop spinal problems.
Yes, they are.
I mean, especially regular, you know, standard Dachshunds.
Yeah, because they get bred so much for doing the burrowing and going through burrows. They're like, oh, long and lean. Well, that developed a back that's, you know, a little too long for the body and legs that are a little too short
to keep it from dragging.
Yeah,
and it doesn't help that they're also fearless and jump the fuck off the back of the cow. Oh, wait, no, that's just ours.
No, there are others that do it somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah. But, so yeah, I mean, read the whole article. It was kind of long. I didn't want to read it all the way through. But yeah, it will be interesting to keep an eye on these, just strictly because you've got, you know, two different methods, watching two different things. It's going to be one of those things where you're going to have, it almost seems like they can come to the same conclusion, but in different ways.
Yeah. Kind of. I mean, just from the article itself, it seems like they're kind of coming to very similar conclusions.
Just the different, but in different species. Yeah, now this is just talking about social monogamy. I mean, there are animals out there that almost have genetic monogamy. Once you mate, you've pretty much mated for life, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, we see that in penguin and
many bird species.
Yeah, many bird species. They basically... They mate for life. I mean, that's one of the things we hear about.
Yeah.
But you hear it, you don't really hear it with mammals.
No.
You don't really hear that. Yeah, that's one thing.
They do seem willing to move on to a new mate should something happen.
Happen, right.
Or even have no monogamy at all.
Right.
So, yeah.
So that, I mean, that does explain, I mean, men at this point should be able to control that, you know, if you're going to be monogamous, you should, I mean, I'm sure we all have base down that we want, you know, on that primitive side, yes, we want to bang anything that will let us bang them.
At least guys do. No, girls do.
It comes to girls, but I think it is genetically more male, because again, you think about it, you can only, I mean... And I'm just talking on a primitive. I mean, because you think about it, also humans are one of two species that have sex for pleasure. The other one being dolphins.
Yep.
Because if you think about it, like, just think feline sex.
That doesn't look pleasurable at all.
Well, considering the male has barbs on his penis when it's erect, yes.
Yeah.
Think about the not in canine species.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about other primates, but it does seem like humans have developed the, you know, they found out sex feels good and we can do it without having to propagate. Because it seems like with other animals, the female has to go into heat to even come up with the idea of having sex, you know.
I think there might be a few other primates that do. But I'm not sure
well,
on that.
Well, we
I
know mean, there's masturbation in monkeys.
Oh, and, yeah. I've got pictures from the Atlanta Zoo. I mean,
but, I mean, even in the wild, it does seem that at least masturbation, I think both male and female.
Yeah.
Are you know, there are showing to where they do that. So, I mean, I don't know if it's something they've studied or if it just doesn't happen with other primates. So.
Not sure.
I think with humans, because it is, our main thing does seem to be pleasurable, where in other mammal species, it's a painful act.
Yeah, painful act, and it's for propagation
only. Right. You don't hear about a lot of kitty bondage clubs. Wait, no, those are only furries, I'm sorry.
Yeah, though those are still human.
Yeah.
Even though they might not want to be.
Yeah. So.
Might. Yeah. I can't speak for all of them.
But it is. So I can see on a primal level, men wanting to do it because it is kind of hardwired. I mean, you're trying to fight against, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years of evolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's pleasurable, but then again, there's also the propagation.
I think that's the problem, is that the combination of the primal urge to mate. And the fact that sex does feel so good. It's a double whammy, yeah. You got a chance to stick it in someone. Yeah, you're going to stick it in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. 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 So, I think that's about it for this week. Again, you want to get a hold of us, tell us we suck, tell us you know, you love us, you want to bear our children. fits in with what we just talked about, honey.
I know. Okay. Moving on.
We have several ways of you getting a hold of us. If you like us, you know, give us 5 stars on iTunes.
Yeah, definitely.
You want to drop us a line? You can drop us a line at kinkyandthegeek@gmail.com.
Or message us on Twitter at kinkyandthegeek.
You can follow if you want.
You can follow us there, too.
You can follow us, yep. You want to join us on FetLife? Join us on FetLife, we're friends of Kinky and the Geek. And
on Facebook.
And Facebook. We do have our own little fan page. And of course, WordPress.
Yes.
KinkyandTheGeek.wordpress.com.
Where you can listen to this, read the notes, leave us a message.
Thank to our pictures.
There's a few pictures. There. I need to work on that.
And no one wants to spank to my picture. So.
Hey, wait a second.
Well, you don't have to spank to my picture. I'm right here.
Not when you're at work.
That's true. Okay, so until next time, be good.
Be good at it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.